and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening tonight. Tonight we have Dr. Gottfried Kellermann of Neurosciences, and we're going to talk about neurotransmitter testing and adrenal testing and how you can use these tools to change the way that you feel. So how are you, Dr. Kellermann?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to come on my show today.
Yes.
Before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit about you and where people can find you?
Beg your pardon, I didn't get it.
Can you just tell my listening audience a little bit about you and your labs, what you do there, and where they can find it?
Yes. Personally, I'm a biochemist by training, and I have been in the medical business really all my life. And I also studied philosophy. This was in my early years, till I found out that really with philosophy you really cannot make any money. So at that time, when I got married and my wife was pregnant, I decided to, besides philosophy, I wanted to do something else. And so I studied biochemistry. And then over the years, I've been in many disciplines, and finally, about 10, 15 years ago, I ended up in a discipline called neurology. At that time, I knew very little about neurology, but, you know, we are all intelligent people, and we can learn something. And I find it a fascinating field. And I have to say, the nervous system is really central to our health. And so far, we have not sufficiently exploited this notion that really the nervous system runs the show. We all know that, and we all do lip service to that fact that we realize that the brain really, you know, this is where everything comes together, and consequently, it knows everything that's going on in your body. For instance, you have, an inflammation or a problem in your toe. Within a split second, the brain knows about it, and it will do something about it. So it plays a central role. So over the years, I also began to understand that the nervous system does not act and react in a vacuum. It is involved with many other systems in the body. Particularly, it is involved with the immune system, and we'll talk a lot about the so-called neuroimmune interaction. It will become an eye-opener for you what the interaction is and what the consequences are of this interaction. And of course, you know, the endocrine system plays into that field too. We are talking about neuroendocrine issues. And there are new ways on the horizon that via the nervous system, you can change your hormones so that down the road and in the future, we will do relatively little hormone replacement therapy. We will use the nervous system to manipulate your hormones in the body. But this is for something later on.
I would like to talk about that before the show's over, but I have one question here.
About 10, 12 years ago, I just had sold a previous company, and I thought I was still too young and to retire, so I should do something. So I started a company called Neuroscience. Neuroscience is a biotech company. We roughly have about 150 people, and we are located outside of Minneapolis, in Osceola, Wisconsin. It is just across the border from Minnesota. And at that time, somebody brought some test to me called neurotransmitter tests. Now, what are neurotransmitter tests? You might have heard about molecules such as serotonin or dopamine, and maybe to a lesser degree about norepinephrine. You definitely have heard about adrenaline. So these are all neurotransmitters. Those neurotransmitters are really the tools of the nervous system. They run the show. They go everywhere in the body. And you find them in all tissues, not just in the brain, but throughout the body, because they relay the signals from the brain to the body and vice versa. And later on, when we go through some analysis of patients, I will show you what those neurotransmitters, those signals can do for you. And also, those signals and the levels of the signals are paramount to health. And I also will show you how our modern lifestyle, you know, our busy lives, our stress situations, then our epidemic of, you know, getting heavier and heavier and putting on more weight, how this affects the nervous system. So there is a lot of implications. And I also will show you what you can do about it and also how you can test for it. For the longest time, it was believed that you cannot test for the nervous system. Remember, when you go to a doctor, he will always ask you, well, how is your cholesterol, how is your blood pressure, and how are many other things. He never probably has asked you, how is your nervous system? It has not occurred to him. No criticism here. But, you know, at that time, doctors have not learned those things in medical school. But during the last 10 years, the situation has changed.
I just want to tell my listening audience one thing, Dr. Kellerman.
Yes.
We are not, Dr. Kellerman is not a medical doctor.
No.
And neither am I. We're not trying to diagnose you, and we're not trying to treat you. We're just providing you with information so that you can make intelligent decisions about your health. So I just want to make that clear. We don't want to get in any kind of trouble here.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Dr. Kellerman, I just want to ask one question before we get started. You talked about the brain. Does the gut play a role in this too?
Yes. There is a direct gut-brain connection. You heard about, some of you at least, about the second brain. The gut indeed is the second brain. And this is really the science of the gut is still very much in its infancy. And we're beginning to learn that your composition of the gut or the bacteria in your gut can have a significant effect on how your brain is working, whether you're depressed or not depressed. And this is very exciting news. On the other hand, we have so many bacteria and fungi in our system to sort out all those things that will take some time. But I just will give you later on a little bit of a glimpse what's on the horizon and what can be done about it.
Okay. We did testing on a sample patient who is an 18-year-old girl who had originally had a drug problem. And we're going to talk about these. We've got two tests, two different months where we could see the results. And Dr. Kellerman's going to talk about the results that we found and what they tell us about this person. Sorry to my listening audience. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty, so we're going to pick back up. So we were talking about Dr. Kellerman. We ran two tests on an 18-year-old teenager, female, who had originally had a problem with street drugs. So we ran these tests on her, and I'd like for you, if you wouldn't mind, if we could use these tests and just tell my listening audience what these tests tell us about this individual and how this individual can use these tests to better her health.
Eva, before we get into that one, can you maybe from a clinical point of view describe this patient a little bit more in detail? Because this is very important for me then to tell the audience how things are connected.
Okay. Well, I'll just tell you, this is my daughter, and she went through a very traumatic period of time. She got raped, and she started using street drugs. And we had really serious problems with depression, really serious problem with cutting, you know, self-mutilation. We've got those things fixed now, through diet, but I want my listening audience to know that there is hope. She's 18 years old, she's about 5'4", and she weighs about 100 pounds. What else would you like to know?
Okay, I think that is enough for, you know, to get started here. You know,
okay.
It is always when I hear about those problems, and believe me, there is many teenagers like that. She's no exception. The first question I'm always asking myself, why do those people get on this kind of self-medication in the first place? What's behind it? Since I'm a biochemist and since I know something about the nervous system, I look at those numbers. I look at numbers of various neurotransmitter systems. Remember what I said. There are only really, you know, in essence, a handful of key neurotransmitters which are responsible for this kind of symptomology. I have to go back a little bit and explain to you what they are. One of them, you all have heard about serotonin. Serotonin is a very, very important neurotransmitter, and it is not just being used, what you read on the internet, for in issues of depression. It is also an important regulator and modulator. Another important one is dopamine. Dopamine is very much involved in how people feel, you know, it is people, how they react, how they reason. In people with drug addiction, dopamine plays a major role. And then we have another key neurotransmitter, which is called norepinephrine or noradrenaline. And noradrenaline or norepinephrine plays a critical role in issues of depression, but then again also in situations like learning situations, how you feel, how your body functions, and so on and so on. And the fourth key neurotransmitter here is epinephrine or adrenaline. You all heard about the adrenaline rush, and you also have heard about people who are constantly tired and pooped and whatsoever. These are the people who have extremely low adrenaline levels. And then in the brain, but also in the body, there is another two key neurotransmitters, which are called GABA and glutamate. Both are at the opposite end of the spectrum. GABA is a very calming neurotransmitter. And just to get back to something you might understand, all the sleep medications are pretty much GABA drugs because they down-regulate the system, they calm it down, they bring the system to rest. The counterpart of GABA is, of course, glutamate. Glutamate is the so-called, it's the antagonist to GABA. It makes you very excited. It can really give you sleepless nights. It can make you very nervous. And every excitement you might experience, glutamate is involved, and it can reach very high levels. Down the road, I also will tell you that also the immune system, meaning there is the immune system that fights infection, makes very much use of glutamate. And so it really throws a monkey wrench into a normally well-functioning nervous system. So
I would like to tell you something right here that might
Let's go back
to
Jessica. Jessica,
she had a problem. She smoked marijuana a lot right after this happened.
Yeah. And of course, you know, clinically she showed the issues of depression, and some fatigue issues, and again, you know, she's self-medicated. Usually there is a
reason. And she also had really bad problems with...
when I looked at her results,
at her finger,
at her
she got a splinter in her finger,
which is we always call the baseline less, then I saw that the levels of norepinephrine were very, very low. At the same time, so that is the reason why she, you know, was depressed and showed symptoms of depression. At the same time, you know, her adrenaline levels are very high. So you normally, the systems are pretty much balanced out. You have a good amount of norepinephrine in your body, and you have a good amount of epinephrine in your body. And in a very healthy and balanced person, those systems support each other and are completely balanced out. But, of course, that is in the ideal life. In real life, this is not so. But also, not because of lifestyle, but also because of genetics, imbalances are created. So in her case, and it was interesting to hear that Jessica had very low norepinephrine levels, but very, very high epinephrine levels. There is some genetics behind it, and that was interesting to see and to hear from Eva that she weighs only 100 pounds. 100 pounds, that is not much. I've never seen a Jessica, but I assume she is a slim, slender girl, and she does not have any weight problems. Am I correct, Dr.
She's a runner. She, like, freaks out about her weight.
No, there is genetics behind it. We call it she belongs to the adrenal type. Everybody who is the adrenal type has a tendency to become depressed eventually. So that is one issue. So she always will be on the adrenal side. She always will be a little bit more on the nervous side, and she always will be a little bit on the depressed side. So there is genetics behind it. But it's not genetics by itself that really, you know, causes all those problems, what she experienced. The other thing, what I saw in her report, was she had elevated levels of glutamate. Remember the excitatory neurotransmitters? She also had elevated levels of GABA. This can be explained. Whenever glutamate goes up, GABA jumps in to bring the glutamate levels down. Remember, it is always the goal of the body to keep it balanced between systems. So now you wonder what causes those elevated levels of glutamate, which is really the primary issue. The primary issue is not elevated levels of GABA, but elevated levels of glutamate. At the moment, and overall, I think we ran about 13 different neurotransmitters on Jessica. And what struck me was she had extremely high levels of another neurotransmitter called glycine. Glycine is very much involved. Although it is, in essence, a calming neurotransmitter, it has many functions in the body. However, glycine also goes up if and when you have any issues of infection, issues of inflammation, and so on and so on. So overall, when I looked at her total numbers, clearly one can be stated that Jessica had inflammatory issues, and she still might have inflammatory issues. So when you have inflammatory issues, then certain neurotransmitters, which are created by the immune system, you will see right away, and you were wondering, how come the immune system also can secrete neurotransmitters? Indeed, this is the case. Nothing in the body is truly specific. Immune cells also can pump out neurotransmitters, but they're being used by the immune system for a completely different reason. So overall, at the moment, I have to tell you, and this is based on my experience, I do this already for 12 years, that Jessica definitely had, when she did the baseline test, significant problems with inflammation. Inflammation drives up a number of neurotransmitters, such as glycine. It also drives up epinephrine even more, and it also drives up dopamine. So normally you would say, okay, what can we do about it? Since she is depressed, inflammation, you probably cannot see on the outside that she has inflammation. By the way, these days, many people have inflammation, they just don't know it. There are recent estimates that as much as 50% of the American population have inflammation issues. Not overt inflammation, but low-level chronic inflammation. You might have heard that, for instance, people with increased weight, or forget about obesity, but people with increased weight have inflammatory issues, or it can result in inflammation. On the other hand, there's many sources of inflammation, not just bacteria or viruses or yeast issues or food issues. There's also emotional issues. Emotional issues by themselves can cause and mimic the inflammation pattern. So think about it. We are all are stressed out. We live in a very stressful environment. Many of us are married. Many of us live in a family. There's tension at home. There's tension at work. All this adds to low inflammation pattern in all of us. So let's not forget that. And then one more important thing. Whenever you have inflammation, inflammation over time has consequences for the nervous system. None of the system really acts in isolation. Neither the immune system, nor the nervous system, nor the endocrine system. So, whenever people have inflammation, albeit low inflammation, sooner or later, and that might take months or years, many, many years, till it catches up with you, until it has profound effects on the nervous system, then all of a sudden, things pop up and come to an explosion. But in Jessica's case, since she is leaning by herself already to low levels of norepinephrine and high epinephrine or high adrenaline level, the situation became much more pronounced. You know, she's just 18 years old and she still already she has to deal with inflammatory issues. From a medical point of view, usually what I advise doctors to do here is first get the inflammation under control. And it's important for our doctors to learn what can cause inflammation in our modern world. As I said, emotional issues is definitely not on their are not on their list. So we have to educate our medical community that indeed emotional issues of any sort, you know, particularly in those stressful times which we have today, have to be checked. Then, of course, you know, we have the classical infectious patterns, like bacteria, viruses, yeast issues, and so on, which can cause inflammation. But then we also have chemical sensitivities. We have food issues. We hardly know anymore what is in our food. All our foods, many of our food items are artificial. They have been manipulated. They come from fields which, you know, where heavily, you know, pesticides have been used. So those things all get into our body, and our bodies fight this kind of exogenous chemicals. But eventually, things, people react to it. And many people can live with this kind of challenge, chemical challenges coming from the outside world. But due to genetics, other people can. You might have heard that people, and I'm not talking here about allergies, food allergies and things like that. No, I'm talking here about food sensitivities. And usually it's those foods who like the, you like the best you might have a sensitivity to. And these days, we can test for those things. But then also, you might have due to genetic reasons, sensitivities to metals and the jewelry and all of that. I was joking the other day. One of our employees, you know, was found that she had a nickel allergy and a gold allergy and a silver allergy and whatsoever. And The number one sensitivity here in this country is sensitivity to nickel. So I started joking. I told the woman, your husband is kind of cheap. He buys you just the cheap jewelry, which is really, you know, 80 to 90% nickel and not really gold. So keep that in mind. There's a lot of nickel sensitivity, and nickel sensitivity in itself can cause inflammation. Dr. Hur, you have to tell me when to stop, and then you interrupt me. I'm running here a monologue.
You say great. I did have
maybe
a question.
Maybe I'm going a little bit too fast, because these are very complex issues.
If you have that glutamate,
because, you know,
that high glutamate
time,
level, how do you bring it down?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Because for the first
time... I said if you have high glutamate levels, how do you bring it down?
Yeah. So the number one issue is doctors have to learn when they see a patient, they have to consider pretty much in parallel all three systems, the endocrine, the nervous system, and the immune system. So we, rather than doing a linear consideration of problems, we should do a circular consideration of problems. So now you come back to the practical question, what can we do about it? In case of Jessica, your daughter, my recommendation to the physician and to her doctor would be address immediately the inflammatory issues. And secondly, and pretty much in parallel, try to support her nervous system so she gets out of her depression. And apparently, Dr. Hur, you did something because the levels of Jessica changed significantly from the first test to the second test. But some of the problems remained.
We changed her diet to a paleo diet, you know,
yeah.
High protein.
Can you elaborate a little bit? What did you do to explain some of the differences?
And we also put her on
this
amino acids called Total Amino Solution and another vitamin mineral supplement that's really bioavailable called Empower Plus.
Yes.
And when we did that, radical things happened.
Yes. Yes.
In her behavior. It radically changed.
Yeah. It dramatically changed. So the on the laboratory test, what changed dramatically, you know, the neurotransmitter glycine, which is really, in her case, an inflammation parameter, was reduced dramatically. She came from a high level of 2,600 down to a level of 500. So this is huge. That is huge. So you must have done something right here. And that this was definitely, you know, the right thing to do. Whether this is, you know, the specific items you use or the specific supplements remains to be seen. But there is many ways and many streets lead to Rome. So there is many things you can do to bring those levels down. But definitely I have to agree with you. The materials you used on your daughter definitely, you know, make a lot of sense to me.
So I'm curious. She has high serotonin and high taurine. What does that mean?
That definitely had the ability to fight the inflammation, what Jessica had. At this point, we don't know where the inflammation came from. Maybe she had a bug in her system. Maybe she had some emotional issue or God knows what. But apparently, she responded very well. So glycine, the inflammation parameter, came down dramatically. It decreased down to, you know, to 20%. It came back into the so-called normal range. But also glutamate, you know, from a high level of around 50, came down to 36, which is a significant improvement for glutamate. So what it tells me as a biochemist, as a laboratory analyst, it tells me something gets here, gets into the right direction. We are reducing the amount of inflammation. And remember, as long as a patient has to deal with inflammatory issues, you never will be able to correct neurotransmitters of the nervous system or to correct long-term neurological issues such as depression or anxiety. All the symptoms, of course, you know, get better with the various treatments, but they do not truly get better unless you really remove what we call root cause. In her case, this was inflammation. So I was very happy to see that some of the numbers have changed. Also, another parameter that has changed dramatically was the neurotransmitter GABA. It came down from a high level of 10 to a level of 5. Really, the GABA activity dropped in half. Of course, you know, this makes perfectly sense. Remember, whenever you have high glutamate levels, or quite often, not always, GABA kicks in. So now, since glutamate is reduced, there is no need anymore, at least a great need, for GABA to be around to suppress the glutamate level and bring it back into a normal balance. So this explains that one. You see,
what about the taurine? That changed a lot.
Taurine changed too.
It doubled.
Taurine. At this point, we do not clear the taurine again has a multitude of functions in the body, but it definitely is involved in cardiac issues. It definitely is involved what we call with sympathetic activity, with the sympathetic drive. I do not know what the situation of your daughter is. Does she, is she usually very active, or does she show signs of fatigue, or is she always very tired? Maybe, Dr. Hurst, since I know nothing about her, can you elaborate a little bit for me what the situation is on your daughter?
And I'm not a doctor, by the way. I'm just Dr. Kellerman. I'm just a woman that has interests in alternatives. But originally she was so tired she couldn't even walk around.
Okay.
And then when we changed her diet, we also detoxed her from metals.
Yeah.
We did that.
Yeah.
And then once it changed, her level, she got a lot of energy, but she also got, before we changed her diet, she was prone to have a lot of panic attacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
a lot of impulsivity.
Yeah.
Where she would, you know, if she got stressed out, she would cut herself or do some radical thing like that.
Yeah. Eva, you mentioned you did some detox treatments on her. So, metal detox. So, it could very well be that the cause of her inflammation was indeed some metal sensitivity. I wouldn't be surprised. The frequency and the incidence of metal sensitivity in the American population is quite high. So, always keep this in mind. So maybe the detox procedures, you know, helped to reduce the level of toxicity and kept the inflammation or brought back the inflammation to a normal level, which resulted from the exposure to various metals. So now let me address
a little bit. A lot of people are interested in adrenals. That's a big topic nowadays. Adrenal exhaustion. Could we talk a little bit about what your testing shows with adrenals?
Yeah. Fatigue issues really come from two sources. It comes, as you pointed out, it comes very much and is dictated by the adrenal activity. And, however, it is also, and it cannot completely be separated from that, the activity of the overall sympathetic function. Sympathetic function, this is, you know, the activity that controls how your organ function, whether your organs function are in high gear or low gear and whatsoever. Remember, all those activities and all those controls are sitting in the brain. To be specific, they're sitting in the brain stem. The brain stem, these are the regulatory components and the control switches, which really decide whether you have a high activity or low activity, and so on and so on. But, of course, it is very difficult to measure those parameters in the brainstem. So we always have to resort to indirect measurement. But by now we understand a few things and what those numbers in the body mean. Remember, if you want to measure something in the body, Even if it's just issues that come from the brain, you have to resort to what we call peripheral parameters. You have only in terms of body fluids, you have only the blood, you have the urine, you have saliva, and not much else. Even in the future, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to open up the brain and measure certain neurotransmitters, to measure all those control switches which really guide and lead to all those symptoms in the periphery. Because just a minute, even if it were possible to do this routinely, if you open up the brain, immediately things begin to change. So, let's come back to adrenal. The adrenal activities are very much controlled by the brain, by the brain stem. And there is several nuclear, several neuronal centers in the brain stem which decide how high those activities are. And one of them is a brain center, and you might hear more about it in the future, what we call the locus coeruleus, the blue nucleus, because upon staining it has a bluish tint. It's called the locus coeruleus. It plays a key role in adrenal activity. But there's other centers in the brain stem, like the C1 nucleus, which is very much involved in the activity of the adrenal. So unless you change those activities in the brain, your adrenal activity is not getting much better. For the longest time, and I remember since I have been in medicine and in biochemistry for over 40 years now, all those things have been treated peripherally, meaning on the level of the body and not on the level of the brain. So what we did was we gave many of those patients some so-called adrenal extracts. And they indeed, they worked a little bit. And you will find this treatment still very, very widespread. And you will see many of those supplements being offered on the internet, adrenal extracts. Yes, they can give you a boost. But this is the wrong way to treat and to resurrect adrenal activity. Adrenal activity, in order to bring back to normal life, has to be done in the brain. And we know how to do it. Also, remember, people with PTSD, which is very much involved also with the low adrenal activity, comes from the brain. Anxiety issues, all those things come from the brain. So by number of treatments where you boost those centers in the brain stem, like the C1 nucleus, or like the locus coeruleus, you really bring back the adrenal activity in the body back to life. All of a sudden, people begin to have more energy, more power, more stamina. In the laboratory equivalent, you see their cortisol levels begin to rise. Their adrenaline levels, their epinephrine levels increase. So it all goes into the right in the right direction.
So looking at her test, can you see a difference with our changes that we made? Is it a good? I see a difference there, but is that a good difference or bad? They're high.
Yeah,
all the numbers are higher.
Yeah.
Is
so
that good?
Right now we have a level of. Unfortunately, we do not have levels of cortisol here. So this is a little bit of a handicap. But number one. On the laboratory test, epinephrine had a concentration of originally 13, and now we are down.
Well, there
to,
are cortisol. You did do a cortisol test. I'm looking.
I did
at
cortisol.
It.
Unfortunately, oh yeah, I do have the cortisol. I do have this. I apologize.
All right.
So,
I just want people to know whether there is something you can do or not. Did this work or not work?
Yeah. Now it's worse. So cortisol. Shows a normal diurnal variation in the normal cycle. Under normal conditions, we have high cortisol levels in the morning, and those levels continuously decline throughout the day. So in her case, she had a very nice rhythm. It was elevated in the morning, and it was very low in the evening. On the other hand, when after treatment, her cortisol levels got even higher in the morning, which indeed is a good sign. So originally we had a level of cortisol in the morning, 7.5 at 8 o'clock, then at 12 o'clock it was 2.4, and then it was low for the rest of the day. After treatment, her cortisol had jumped to a level of 9, but it did not really bottom out after a few hours. Even at 3 o'clock, there was a level of 5, which is significant because now she begins to have more stamina throughout the day. She doesn't tire out that quickly. So that is significant. You have to be able to control your cortisol in such a way that it slowly, slowly keeps down and it doesn't bottom out, you know, after 2 or 3 hours in the morning. The adrenaline levels, the adrenaline levels from a high of 13 were reduced to 6. That is an initial reaction. It will not stay that way because, you know, you did some treatment or she underwent some treatment and then meaning in the first place which addressed inflammation. And as a result of that, epinephrine came down. As you rebuild the health of the daughter, the epinephrine levels will slightly increase, but they never will get back to the high level of 13, which is very important. It cannot be too high, but it also cannot be too low. But let me point out a few other things here. As I said, fatigue issues, and we all seem to have fatigue issues. The adrenals are involved on one side. But there's then what we call the overall sympathetic function on the other hand. And in her case, the sympathetic function, which is difficult to see in her test results because it is masked by the inflammatory issues, is overall low. And the reason why I say that, when you look at the histamine results, and histamine can be used as a biomarker for sympathetic activity, you see, it comes from a high of 22 down to a level of 14. So meaning, once we have removed the inflammation, in most cases and in most people, you see the true damage. And it tells me this person or this patient has low sympathetic function and it needs to be boosted. So when people have fatigue, you have to boost both the adrenal system and in conjunction with that, the sympathetic function. And for both of these issues, you have supplements available.
What would people be looking at?
One of the supplements will be a combination of tyrosine or tyrosine ethyl ester in combination with glutamic acid. And that will give your sympathetic system a good boost. Also, the other thing, what you use, the Empower Plus in this connection will work. It takes time. Those things do not change overnight. You cannot change a body around, you know, within 1 week.
When you're talking about
things,
sympathetic,
you know, take a few months till things get better. Because
you have
to restore certain functions in the brain.
People have if they have poor sympathetic reactions.
Reaction means, you know, overall, all your organs have a low function. They have a relatively low activity. So you have to boost the entire system. And again, that is controlled by the brain. There's another nucleus in the brain which is responsible for sympathetic function. And you have to try to raise the activity of that particular center in the brain. And then all of a sudden, you get better.
Okay.
So here, in her case,
I have another question. Two questions.
Yeah.
I know that there's an issue about whether GABA crosses the blood-brain barrier. And I don't really care to, you know, get into that, because I don't have a clue. But
which
I found
one?
This product the other day called Gabitrol, and it's got phenyl GABA, taurine, glycine, theanine, tyrosine, and...
By the way, for everybody who wants to know a little bit about it, GABA, as such, in a healthy person, hardly crosses the so-called blood-brain barrier. However, there is a slightly modified GABA available called phenyl GABA. It can cross the blood-brain barrier. However, there are some people who use normal GABA, and it still crosses the blood-brain barrier because they say, I feel better, you know, I feel more calm, I feel more relaxed. That really is a sign of another problem which those patients have. Meaning, those
what
patients
I wanted to know.
Have
what is
a broken blood-brain barrier. And a broken blood-brain barrier you can get from inflammatory issues. So this is not a good situation. But let's leave that alone. This is a complex issue in itself. Normally, I recommend to use phenyl GABA, and there is various products available that contain phenyl GABA, and it will give you a dramatic boost. And particularly people who have some insomnia or are anxious and the nervous type, for those ones that take phenyl GABA in moderate doses, and then you feel fine. Don't overdose yourself. If you want to use a higher dose, use it in the evening, but not during the day, because during the day you need activity. Which brings us back to the other issue. People say, well, I feel so anxious, I'm nervous all the time. That is another.
Is phenyl GABA safe?
Phenyl GABA is absolutely safe. Phenyl GABA, I would say you can use it without any major problems up to around, 600 milligrams at a time, 5 to 600 milligrams at a time. The only problem that some patients experience is that after a while it doesn't work anymore because then you have used too much. You have to give the body a break, because some of those GABA receptors have been downregulated as a self-protection mechanism. So be a little bit careful with the use of...
I'd like for you to talk a minute about the broken blood-brain barrier. That sounds kind of scary.
It is scary. It will repair itself once people get rid of their inflammation. Many things really go to the brain after a while, and as a result of the chronic inflammation, it can break the blood-brain barrier, and there is quite a significant number of people who have broken blood-brain barriers.
And I would imagine that people who, like Jessica, had an addiction, that could be a problem.
So
do you find that most people who have addictions
have
a blood-brain barrier problem?
Yeah. She always will have a tendency to self-medicate because she has notoriously low levels of norepinephrine in the brain. It is not necessarily the serotonin that is low in her. It is more the norepinephrine. Norepinephrine, and that needs to be boosted all the time. I myself belong into the category of people who have low norepinephrine level. I belong to the adrenal type. And remember, people with the belonging genetically to the adrenal type, they have problems with low norepinephrine levels in the brain. So already for years, I take a supplement that helps me to boost the norepinephrine levels in the brain. And that will overcome, after a few weeks or so, the issues of anxiety. Remember, I mentioned something about the locus coeruleus. The locus coeruleus is the major norepinephrine center in the brain. And then when that activity gets too low, you get into all kinds of issues, including anxiety, depression, addiction, and so on and so on. So I advise, and that would be my further recommendation for the treatment of Jessica, that she takes on a regular basis something that boosts her central norepinephrine level. And in
what,
many
what
cases,
would you take?
It might not be good
what
enough to
what,
just go with medication such as an SNRI.
Well, I don't believe in pharmaceuticals, so what kind of
good
tyrosine
preparation
would you take?
Such
most
as
of my listeners don't want to take pharmaceuticals.
Tester will be a very good one to boost the brain tyrosine levels. And as you know, tyrosine is the precursor to make norepinephrine in the brain, but also in the body. So this would be my recommendation for Jessica. I also would recommend for her treatment, the use of some low levels of L-DOPA. L-DOPA has many functions in the brain, and particularly in people with addiction, they have a shortage there. Because the high levels you see on Jessica on with dopamine is really a result of the inflammation, and that will take a while till everything is normalized in her. Actually, she has very low levels of dopamine. That's why she's self-medicating her. So I recommend that on a regular basis, besides tyrosine, she also takes L-DOPA, and there are some supplements available that you know contain L-DOPA to boost the levels in the brain. By the way, when I mean supplements, be very careful with L-DOPA. Usually you should not treat with more than 25 milligrams to 50 milligrams at a time. So be very careful here.
Okay. Now, do you sell supplements at Neurosciences that people can order?
Yes, we do sell supplements. At the moment, those supplements, we do not sell them at the moment for the consumer market. And this might change in the future. However, at the moment, you have to find a physician, or maybe I think there's already some pharmacies or health food stores that have our supplements or have the equivalent supplements.
Okay.
It is really,
now,
the supplement by itself is not that critical. It's the ingredient and the dosing. And here in the supplement business, particularly when it comes to the nervous system, more is not necessarily better. Remember, the brain and the nervous system and the immune system, these are very finely tuned system. More is not necessarily better. On the support of the norepinephrine in the brain, you can say, for instance, just to give an example, 500 milligrams of tyrosine ethyl ester 2 to 3 times a day will wonders for your depression and for anxiety and so on and so on. People who are on the nervous side, they can take Cabinase, by the way, is another GABA product. It contains phenyl GABA, and it's the normal dosing is around 200 milligrams to 400 milligrams. However, we also have a sleep product called Cabinase Ultra PM for people who have serious sleep issues. Remember, whenever you have sleep issues, it's the first sign that your neurotransmitters are out of whack. This was established many, many years ago by a famous physician, Dr. Fu Lexin from Venezuela, who showed this, that whenever he had people with insomnia, there were many things wrong with various other neurotransmitters. So insomnia or light or erratic sleep is the first sign that your neurotransmitters are out of whack. But also remember, any inflammation issue coming from different sources can derail your nervous system. And another rule of thumb here is, under normal condition, it's the nervous system runs the show. However, if you have an infection or if you have immune issues, then it's the immune system that runs the show, which is not a good situation. So you always have to try to revert that. And I think, Eva, with Jessica, you're well on your way to turn things around, to really get this lopsidedness, which we had in her basal test, where the immune system ran her show, so that the nervous system again brings back the hierarchy here. And this is
well,
the reason why
she really got addicted,
and that's why she was using self-medication
with my daughter.
It is a sign that she had a shortage.
She was really sick. I mean, really sick.
Neurotransmitters.
And the second test, by the time she took that test, she was so much better. So your testing really does help me to understand that we really are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think definitely you're going in the right direction.
How valuable this
But you also see, Eva, it is very difficult for an outside person to, particularly for a lay person, to understand those numbers of those tests, and I hope in the near future we can build some algorithms that makes the interpretation of those numbers much easier. And I do this already for so long, so that's why it is easy for me to recognize on those numbers what might be going on. So I hope I find enough time to sit down and do something here so that those
so
numbers are more readable and more accessible.
Now, I interview a lot of people, and a lot of people say, well, this neurotransmitter test is not accurate for whatever reason. Maybe you're in a bad mood.
You can count on it. You can count on it. You know, I always are curious to hear the arguments why, where they get the notion from that those neurotransmitter tests are not accurate. Recently, we submitted a number of publications or papers for publication that really prove that those neurotransmitter tests are highly accurate. So, what will be the future of all that? I think definitely neurotransmitter testing will become much easier. Right now we do neurotransmitter tests in urine. In a few months, neurotransmitter tests will also be available to check serum or plasma samples. Although, I can tell you right away, it really does not make a difference whether you measure a neurotransmitter in urine or in plasma. And obviously, it is much easier to collect a urine sample than to, get stuck and provide a blood sample. But it doesn't make a difference. The results from a clinical point of view are pretty much the same. Overall, as a company, where do we go from here? We definitely will go into much more depth to understand the neuroimmune interaction. How immune issues, how environmental issues, how the issues of our modern society really derail our nervous system. Remember, there is a reason that people get more and more depressed, that they get put on more and more weight. It's not just a bad lifestyle, but there is a parallelism between the nervous system and the immune system, because being depressed is an issue of the nervous system. Putting on more weight has dramatic immunological consequences. So there is a parallelism. And for the astute observers, you can see those systems are really truly linked together. And this is where most of the actions will go in the next 10 years to understand this precise mechanism.
So, Dr. Kellerman, can people order your testing individually, or do they have to go through their physicians?
At the moment, unfortunately, they have to go to the physician. We have not managed yet to get it through the regulatory agencies that people really can order the test online or whatever, or submit a urine sample. At the moment, we are not permitted this kind of testing because it is argued by those regulatory agencies that the interpretation is kind of difficult and complex. So I hope that by building some algorithm that really crunch all the numbers, it will be possible that in the near future those tests will be become available and accessible to the broad public.
Now we have about 10 minutes left. Do you have anything that you want to talk about that we've not talked about? Are you doing any new research? Or Do you have anything new or anything that we've not covered you feel is important?
Yeah. Maybe, Eva, in the beginning I pointed out that there is also a so-called neuroendocrine issue. And, of course, you know, since some of our listeners are women, it might be interesting to hear what causes some of the endocrine issues. Not just during perimenopause or menopause, but in general.
Okay, I would love to hear about that.
Again, it is important. It's important to see the endocrine system, the system that is responsible for the hormonal output in our bodies, how it is intertwined with the other systems. By the way, whenever you get into perimenopause or menopause, where the ovaries begin to shut down, which before that time in your younger years are the primary source of your major hormones, the estrogens, the progesterone, testosterone, of course, in men, that's the equivalent here. They're all coming from the various organs. So when you go into perimenopause and menopause, the ovaries are shutting down. So now, all of a sudden, many women get depressed. They become erratic, and they say, my mind is not functioning as well, and I'm feeling more anxious, I'm feeling more restless, I have more anxiety. All the more, it is important that you keep an eye on the adrenal function, because now the adrenals become your primary source for your hormonal output. I mean, the adrenals are always pump out hormones, but in relatively small amounts. So you can imagine when, as you get older, and the adrenals are shutting down because they're used up or have been abused, that the source of hormones now also shuts down. I've seen many women who had no menopausal or perimenopausal problems when they had good adrenal function. So it is important to watch your adrenals, to have a good output of adrenal activity. If it's not there, then you have to do something for your adrenal function. I do not say, and I do not claim, that in some women you can go by without doing any hormone replacement therapy. Maybe there's some women who still might need some help there. But for the most part, the systems are designed in such a way with a good adrenal function, even when you go into perimenopause and menopause, there is enough hormonal output to keep you above water. Secondly, there are some women who complain when they get into menopause, they become more depressed, and their mind doesn't seem to be as sharp as it should be. Hormones before menopause really can substitute for neurotransmitter activity. Now you see all of a sudden the neuroendocrine connection. So it is the estrogen who can be a powerful substitute for norepinephrine to keep you in a good mood, to keep you in good shape, and so on and so on. So when your ovary function declines and your hormonal output declines, all of a sudden it becomes obvious how bad your neurotransmitters are. So if they are low from the beginning, then you see the full disaster, and those people then become depressed. Very often, those people in their premenopausal years, they have already bad neurotransmitter levels. However, it doesn't come to the surface. Clinically, it does not become manifest because it's the hormones that cover up and do the trick. However, when you get in menopause, the true damage comes to the surface. So this is a very interesting aspect what we're seeing here. But then again, I'd like to warn a little bit against an abuse or overuse of hormone replacement therapies, because you can make up by really having your adrenals in good health, in good function mode. But then there is another thing. In some patients, it is almost impossible to restore completely adrenal activity. And why is that? There is something in the brain and connected to the activity of the locus coeruleus, which eventually, you know, shows signs of wear and tear. We always live by the assumption the nervous system shows no wear and tear. It functions from start to finish, from the day we are born till the day we die. This is not correct. No, the nervous system, particularly these days, shows signs of wear and tear. That's why you have to do something for your nervous system all the time, particularly as you get older. So you might have heard about soldiers coming back from the wars in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and they show signs of PTSD. And many of those soldiers cannot be helped. They're really doomed and damaged for life. What has happened here is the brain and the activities, the nucleus, the locus coeruleus, have been damaged by their bad experiences during those wars to such a degree that certain things are just, you know, cannot be restored. They're destroyed. So we call it jokingly they have been fried. But, you know, one shouldn't do that. But still, this is really the equivalent of it. Certain things in their brains have been fried. I always say, don't give up hope. Unless you try, you never will find out. Because from a medical point of view, the effort should be, let's salvage what's left, and let's optimize what's left. And I can give credence to all the efforts, including our own, where we restored many of those young men, but also young women, back to life by really boosting their central activity of the locus coeruleus and other areas in the brain. They really came back to life. Are they perfect? Are they good as new? No, they are not. But still, they manage and are able to lead a normal life and can function very well. So, and the issues, you know, to what degree you can restore adrenal function, there is enormous individual variation. We cannot look into people's minds. We cannot really look into their genetics. It's too complex, particularly the genetics of the nervous system, extremely complex. So we really don't know what they have and how, to what degree certain things are damaged. Or like in Jessica's case, whether she has this or that a genetic abnormality that leads or makes her into a so-called adrenal person, or makes her more into a neural dominant person. By the way, you know, the counterparts and the opposite end of what Jessica is. Jessica is an adrenal type, and yet then you have the opposite type. The opposite type is what we call the neural type. They have a much higher, much bigger problem in keeping their weight down. Those people, they are more, I would say, they're more, they have more issues with insomnia. They are more suspicious in their behavior and things like that. But, you know, this is genetics, and there's always environmental factors that change that, either take advantage of it or take disadvantage of it. So when I see people in the street, and I know right away, since I always look at people from a scientific point of view, do they belong more to the adrenal type or do they belong more to the neural type? So don't be surprised. If you, particularly when it comes to eating habits, people put on different amounts of weight. For instance, I'm married to my wife already for 40 years. I belong to I'm the adrenal type, and she's the more neural type. We both pretty much eat the same stuff. I do the cooking. She eats the same portions as I do. And still, you know, we always laugh about it. She has a much harder time keeping her weight under control than what it is for me. So there you see. We are not completely doomed by genetics, but it plays a significant role in our life. So let's not forget it. But still, you always can do something about it. What do I do about those things? Like with Jessica, I would boost more her sympathetic system. In the other people, the more neural type, I boost more the adrenal system, because those people have very low adrenal activity. So their adrenals need to be boosted all the time, and really till they die. And so that is pretty much the situation.
Well, we're about out of time, Dr. Kellum, and I can't thank you enough for coming on. Would you tell people one more time where they can find your website, please?
Yes. The website is www.neurorelief.com. Neurorelief.com. And maybe you will give us a call, and we can find out whether there are any doctors in your neighborhood that are custom of ours or have heard about us and are willing to get the supplements you want or the testing you want. This all can be arranged. I think we got quite a network here, so it should be possible. Don't hesitate to give them a call, and I think our number, you will find them on the website. It's 888. I do not know my own number anymore. But
well,
you
can contact
me,
and the listeners can contact me, and I'll put them in touch with Sharon.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That would be good. Yeah.
And all I have to say is the proof is in the pudding. You hit Jessica like the nail on the head. It was exactly right. So I know this thing works. That's all I can say.
Yeah. So
at the beginning,
and for me, 10, 12 years ago, it was an uphill battle. Now the whole approach finds slowly acceptance, because, you know, life for doctors becomes more difficult, because now they have to think in complex ways, and that is not an easy task.
Right. Well, thank you, Dr. Kellum, and I hope you'll come back again sometime. I always enjoy having you.
It is my pleasure.
Good night.
Okay, good night.